Hi, Paul Slackus, good to plan. I'm speaking to Gloria J. York. Hi, Gloria. How are you?
Oh, great. Thank you, Paul.
Great. Well, Gloria is actually a very interesting woman. She's actually a hotel sales and marketing director, journalist, and public speaker, and had a bestseller called The Midas Touch. The world's leading expert revealed their top secrets of winning big in business and life. Written by yourself with Joe Vitale and a whole bunch of other very talented people. Congratulations on that.
Thank
To
you.
begin with. And now you've written another book that's, I believe, very dear to your heart, a true story. Actually, it's a serious, serious book, a tough subject, and the subject is life, or no life. Medical manslaughter based on a true story. Will your doctor cause your death? Okay, so you know, I received this book, and I said to myself, you know, this is serious. Unfortunately, that most of us go through in life potentially concerning situations with our health, right? And we trust in the doctor, we trust in the hospitals, and so on, or we try our best to, but. There's human nature sometimes, and then I guess there is medical problems. So tell us what happened with you and your situation, please.
Sure. My husband died 6 years ago due to an egotistical doctor making a very huge mistake. He collapsed at home, and when he did, he hit his head a couple of times. The hospital found that he had blood all over his brain and inside his brain, so he was in ICU for 3 days. Then the blood started to go back into his body, and the doctor said, we'll get you up to a regular floor, you'll have rehab, and you'll be home in about 3 days. You're doing great. So up to the regular floor we went, rehab examined him. They said, oh, you're wonderful, we'll see you tomorrow morning, and you'll be out of here in a couple days. He fell asleep, and in walked a doctor with his chart, and she said, I've assumed his chart, and I'm going to change a lot of his medicines, and also I'm going to give him a sleeping pill tonight. And I said, a sleeping pill, doctor? I said, he doesn't need a sleeping pill. I said, is that his chart in your hand? She said, yes. I said, did you read it? I said, 3 days ago, I said he fell, and he's got blood all over his brain and in his brain, and he's sleeping fine, as you can see right now. Said he has no trouble sleeping. And I said, I've always heard that when someone has a concussion, you don't want to push them to sleep anyway. Back and forth we went, and finally she became very belligerent and said, I know what I'm doing. And she stormed out of the room. Well, they knew I didn't want him to have that sleeping pill. And so that evening I left about 8 o'clock, and I went looking for the nurse just to reiterate I didn't, but all of them had gone to dinner. There wasn't a nurse to be found. And I thought, well, that's okay. I'll be home in a half hour. He doesn't get his pills till 10 p.m., so I had plenty of time to call in. But when I got home around 8:30, the phone was ringing. It was my husband just to make sure I got home safely. And I said, how did you dial the phone? He said, the nurse dialed it. She's right here. I said, oh, great, put her on. So I said, I don't want him to have this sleeping pill that the doctor mentioned today, and I just want to reiterate that. I told the doctor that, but I want to make sure. And she said, well, too late. I already gave it to him. I said, what? I said, he doesn't get his pills till 10 p.m. She said, I know, but tonight I decided to give him all his pills early. So they slipped him that pill purposely behind my back. That's the way I feel about this. And I am very intuitive. I get chills all over. I ran in the next morning only to find him already in a coma.
Very good. Well, it's a horrible situation, and my heart goes out to you.
Thank
you.
He
never came out of that coma?
Well, for 2 weeks, I got a new doctor, of course, and had that doctor dismissed, and along with the nurse. And so the new doctor made sure the head of neurology and all his staff got involved in this case. And for 2 weeks in that, they tested him 10 ways this Sunday. And then after 2 weeks, head of neurologist walked in and he said, we're stymied. We don't know why he doesn't wake up. And I said, well, what are we going to do now? What's our next step? And he said, let him die. I said, let him die. He says, he's lived a good life. He's lived a great life from the sound of it. It's time now. Let him die. Let him go. I said, I have no intentions of doing that, doctor. I said, I love him so much. Apparently, you've never loved anyone. He said, yes, I have, but I knew when to let them go. I said, well, I'm not letting him go because he's in there fighting. You don't know him. I do. And so they start badgering me to, we're going to discharge him. We're going to discharge him every single day. I had even talked to the head of the hospital. So after a couple of days, finally, one nursing home, a lot of nursing homes said no to me because he was comatose. But finally, through a hospice provider, she called the doctor she knew, and that doctor happened to be a medical director at this one nursing home that I had chosen that I really liked. And so he took him in, and I was so thankful. And after 3 or 4 days, when he came into the nursing home, I was thanking him 10 ways and saying, oh, thank you so much for taking him in. He's going to come out of this coma. And the doctor said to me, I only took him in because I do expect him to die in 5 days. I said, you do? I said, well, I said, I have more faith than you do, doctor. I said, I will bring him out of this coma. And he said, well, I'm here every couple of days. Let me know how that's working out. Well, 34 days later, with different things that I did, I brought him out of that coma. And at first, he did have a speech deficiency. And so I got a speech therapist to come in a couple of days. Plus, I got baby books and was reading him ABCs and colors and animals. And the next thing you know, finally, the brain itself sparked. And he started talking normally, and he had come out of it. He was, of course, bedridden at that time, had a feeding tube. A lot of times he would think the past was the present and that sort of thing, but at least he was speaking, and he knew me, and so it was the best that it could be. And then I started to be concerned a bit for his safety. You know, you're allowed to be in the nursing home 100 days on Medicare. But when it was about 15 days shy of that or whatever, I started to be concerned for his safety over something that one of the other patients had heard one of the nurses say to him. So I brought him home, and they didn't want us to leave at the nursing home. They said, oh, it's only $14,000 a month to keep him here, and then they lowered it to $10,000. And I said, it has nothing to do with the money. It has to do with he wants to be with me, I want to be with him, and I want him at home with me where I know he's safe. And so I brought him home. And then in the book, I take you through learning about the difference in hospice providers. There's a big difference, and you really got to look at the company that you choose. The company I chose was connected to that hospital, and quite frankly, it was the wrong hospice provider because they were extremely negative, and they shouldn't be negative, but these people were. Yeah. And so all throughout the whole story, it intertwines spiritually, Paul, and 6 miracles occurred in that 7 months. And I relied very heavily on talking with Jesus and the Blessed Mother. And they helped me. They gave me the strength and the fortitude to stand there alone when everyone else, all they could talk about was his death. And I wouldn't accept that. And that's how I got through that. And then even when he was dying, I had us both wear the scapular, the Blessed Mother. We wore it for like 25 years or so, and never took it off every day, maybe to get showered, that sort of thing. But I called on the Blessed Mother as he was dying, and I said, you know, you said that anyone who passes over wearing your scapular will never see the fires of hell. And I said, I hope you keep your promise. And then I went one step further. I said to her, let me know that you kept your promise. And she did in a dream, and that was like miracle number 5. And then about a year after my husband was gone, cremated and gone, One night, he walked into our bedroom. And yes, I'm very metaphysical, taught it. I'm clairaudient, clairvoyant. But just to see him walk into that bedroom full, I mean, it wasn't foggy or just a shadow, it was him. I dropped to my knees and I almost fainted. And that actually ended up being miracle number six. So I proved to you in medical manslaughter that there is life after death. Believe in the supernatural. And obviously, he has channeled me several times and has given all of us a glimpse of what the afterlife is really like.
I'm okay, me, with all of that. I'm so sorry that this whole episode in your life, the most important things in your life, had to take such a not nice turn with other brothers and sisters of ours, right, that are supposedly there to help us, right, medically or emotionally and so on. And it sounds like you hit a group almost. It's worse than just one person, of people that just were not well-intended or really had insecurity problems. It sounds really, oh boy, I mean, you must have been a wreck.
Under normal conditions, yeah, it's amazing. Whenever I even mentioned to the hospice chaplain, because I had to straighten out these two, the hospice nurse and the hospice CNA that was coming, and tell them, get off of this negative talk. I will not have that in my home. God will decide whenever he's to die, not me and definitely not you. And so I was expressing this to the chaplain about their negativity. And she said, well, they're around death so much that it just doesn't faze them much, as time goes on. And I said, I'm sorry, that's a very poor excuse to give me. And she said, I understand. I understand exactly what you're saying. So for some reason, you're right. I'm not saying that every doctor is like this, and I say that in the book. I mean, my personal doctor, she's a beautiful person and very loving and dedicated and very sincere in her work. But these particular doctors that are related in the story, for some reason, they just had that negative attitude. And so throughout medical manslaughter, I teach you how to be an advocate, a superior advocate for that person in the bed and also for yourself as the patient. You learn what to look for. You're not coming there to see your loved one drop some newspapers and magazines and eat some bonbons. You're there to look at them to see, are they frowning? If they're frowning, they're upset about something, they're worried about something, or they're in pain. And you check them to see if they have a rash or any adverse effects to these medicines. You look at the bed sheets, see if they're clean. You ask the person if they had a bed bath that day. You look to see if that tray has been delivered for their breakfast, lunch, or dinner, and it's just sitting there, that nobody came in and fed this person and helped this person. And so you're worried about their nutrition. And that's why being an advocate is a full-time job. And you should ask someone to be your advocate while you're healthy. Like now, you have your senses. And you should say to someone, you know, if I get sick, would you be my advocate? And by that I mean, will you come and visit me every single day and stay about 4 or 5 hours and check me over and meet with the nurse that is attending to me that day and ask about my medicines and ask about my progress and then also meet with the doctor face to face at least once a week? And if you're person that you're choosing to be your advocate, your spouse or whoever, is a senior, then you might want to choose two or three advocates so that they can rotate, because sometimes it's hard for a senior to come every single day and spend those 5 or 6 hours or whatever it's going to take. And But you should do that and choose this advocate while you're healthy.
I couldn't agree with you more, and I have my daughter is my carekeeper, is what I call her, and I'm going to be 70 this year, and I've lived through hospices, and I've lived through, you know, my parents, I've lived through their change of life, I call it also, and I'm very much similar to you. I'm actually an interfaith minister and spiritual minister, ordained, and so on. And a believer in life after whatever we had, and I even believe life before we got here. So you and I have a very similar mindset to where we are right now, and to where we were and where we're going, and so on. So it all seems to make sense to me, especially, you know, in your town, Watson Creek discovered the DNA in Chicago and medical school. And we're all connected, you know. We can throw in the animals and the plants and everything, and the DNA has proved that we're all one, namaste om. So, you know, what I really respect you for and thank you for is really your advocacy thinking. In addition to the hardship and the sadness of what you've gone through, you've still taken it on as a important outreach for you. This book is very important. When I received it, and you see statistics, 400,000 people died from medical maybe mistakes and so on and so forth. And we try our best to think that the doctor, I have tremendous faith. I mean, I'm not a doctor, so if the doctor tells me I need surgery or to do this 9 times, I mean, I might go for second or third opinion, which I think is very wise also. But, you know, we are putting our hands our lives in the hands of somebody else. And it has its concerns. There's no doubt. But you've taken it very positively. You've come out and spoken positively for it. And I'm talking too much. So thank you.
I thank you. It was very difficult to write Medical Manslaughter. As a matter of fact, it took me 3.5 years to write it. And I would start it, and then, of course, it would get very emotional and hard to relive this. And I'd stop. Sometimes I'd stop for a couple months, and until somebody, I'd run into somebody, and they'd go, "Hey, how's that book coming?" And I, "Oh, yeah, it's coming, it's coming." And so many times I had to force myself to go back to it. But the only thing that kept me going was thinking that whoever reads this, hopefully it will save their life. If you read this and you say, "Well, I see what she did was right," and I see some mistakes that she makes and made, and I certainly don't want to make those mistakes. And so you learn so much by time you get to the final word. And so when you're in the hospital, even in the doctor's office, and he's saying this, that, or another in all medical terms, you'll have more backbone now, and you'll learn to say, "Excuse me, doctor, can you give that to me in layman terms? Because I'm not really understanding you or following you." And then sometimes if they hand you a prescription to give to the pharmacist, if you can't read it, how can the pharmacist read it? Because there are so many medicines that are extremely similar as far as writing them and their name, but they have tremendous differences in the reaction it'll have in your body. And this is something a lot of people don't think about, and they end up getting the wrong medicine, and then they call the doctor, and, you know, "This medicine is making me nauseous," or "This medicine's making me dizzy." "Oh, really? What are you taking again?" Oh, no, that's, oh my, that's the wrong medicine. You're supposed to be taking this. And so it warns you about so many things to look out for.
Yeah, the whole... This book is very, very, very important. Let me ask you one of the another one of the questions that can help our audience. What is a living will and the power of attorney for healthcare, and why are these documents important?
Yes. Well, when you do your will, you do have a power of attorney. You make a power of attorney for your finances and a power of attorney for your health. It's important because when you go to, you're in the hospital and you're talking to the nurse or supervisor or in the nursing home, they're going to say to you, and who are you? And you say, well, I'm the power of attorney for his health. And they may ask you to prove it. They may say to you, can you give me that in writing? And that might shock you, but it's true. And so when you choose an advocate, and that's part of the will, a separate page of power of attorney for your health, make a couple copies of that particular page, and whoever you choose to be your advocate, give that to them. So this way, when the hospital or nursing home sees it in writing, then all of a sudden you're respected more. That's the bottom line.
Well, okay, that's another important point. You know, you're really sharing important. You know, there are a couple of things we don't learn in school, and first of all, we don't know how to raise children. No course, there's no nothing. It's a free for all. And two, we don't know how to take care of our family and our parents. We don't know how to take as they age, right? Or a sick loved one. We just are ill-prepared for the most, in essence, the most important things in our life, right? That the loved ones around us, we don't know what to do. No one told us. No, nobody even told us about an attorney. Who knows we need to even go to an attorney, right?
That's right. That's why this book, there's never been a book written like this, honestly, and there probably won't ever be, but who knows. But anyway, that's why it's become a number one bestseller itself, is because it has such a superabundance of information, that so much to learn, so much to know. And I've done several book signings, one just recently last week to a full house, and people just lined up afterwards, not only to sign the book, but to say, I am so thankful that you wrote this book. I just have to say thank you to you. And, you know, words like that really touch you, because no matter what you went through to write it, it certainly was worth it.
And I feel in my soul that your husband would be saying the same thing. He would be thanking you for coming out and doing all this. I got the sense that you two had that kind of marriage, a very, very
thank
strong
you.
Loving, kind marriage. Let me ask you two last questions, because I know this must be emotional every time you actually do this and speak with somebody. We're very involved with World Peace and the International Day of Peace, and I've asked thousands of people. It's September 21st, and what is peace for them? So, Gloria, if you wouldn't mind, what does peace mean to you?
Well, peace is inner peace is naturally peace of mind first. You have to have peace of mind in order to have peace in your body and all. And I get peace because I am very spiritually connected. Without being spiritually connected and being connected to your creator, no matter what you call, if you can call him God, source, spirit, pick a name, it doesn't matter. But as long as you're connected to that spirit and you thank that God every single day, you're grateful for everything you have. Even if you're homeless, you still have so much yet to be grateful for. And so you thank God every day for all that you have that you're grateful for. And we're so blessed. And that brings me peace. That brings me contentment, because I know God is looking after me and he's in control. You know, I'm just the follower. I'm just doing what he asks me to do. And in this particular case now, I'm like his messenger. And I feel good about that. I feel blessed that he loves me that much.
Okay, thank you. My last, we have a channel for love, a love channel. And I've asked many people, what does love mean to them? So, Gloria York, what does love mean to you? And congratulations, and thank you very much for creating this important work and sharing your true story.
Okay, thank you so much for having me. It's available, Medical Manslaughter is available on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or my website, GloriaJYork.us. So I hope anyone who's listening, I hope you obtain a copy some way, somehow, because I know you'll be very glad that you did.
Beautiful. And love for Gloria York is?
Peace. They go hand in hand. Peace and love. Love and peace.
There you go. Okay. Gloria, thank you so much for sharing your important work with everybody. And it would be a pleasure to meet you at that someday. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. God bless you.
God bless you as well. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.